Wayne Fredericks, Osage, Iowa. We farm just south of the Minnesota border there, about 15 miles. I've been farming there for about 45 years. And I currently serve as one of Iowa's directors on the American Soybean Association board.
Wayne, take us through your journey on pollinator habitat, something that you've become very passionate about.
Well, it's been really interesting. Probably about 4 years ago, we established some pollinator habitat on our farming operation, and that was kind of in response to the president's first initiative there to get some habitat put back in place, because we recognized that the monarch butterfly was in dire need of habitat, where that species was on the way towards extinction. And we took advantage of that. We utilized a program called Ag Solver here in Iowa that we done an economic analysis, basically, of taking yield maps, multiple years worth of yield maps, and overlaying that over our cost structure, and you come up with a profitability analysis on a farm. And so it gives you a little different thought process about how you address certain situations on farm. And we had some little pieces here and there that they didn't fit equipment, or they were next to a grove or a windbreak, and you just had these environmental effects that, you know, consequently they didn't have, really high yields or anything. And we found that, through the CRP program at that time, and enrolling in the pollinator program provided a more stable and better profit opportunity on those acres. And it's also kind of been fun and enjoyable to have and watch that and be a visible part of your operation.
It sounds like it would be kind of an overwhelming process at the start. As you got into it, though, did you find it was a bit simpler than you expected?
Well, we've tried, I think I have 7 different patches of pollinator habitat. And my first ones were very successful. And so sometimes you become overconfident in your ability to establish pollinator habitat, but you quite easily learn that it's not that easy sometimes, and that there's some protocols that even if followed don't quite make sense, and you don't always have 100% success the first time. So we've had to reseed a couple small ones. We put a bioreactor in on our farm here 2 years ago, and we seeded it that first winter with pollinator habitat, and boy, I didn't see much last summer, so we reseeded it again this fall. But things like that, make you realize that, especially when people attempt to do this on larger acreages, that you can have some wins and loses in this battle of establishment. And I happen to serve the American Soybean Association as a representative on the Monarch Collaborative, which is on the national level. That's a collaborative is basically composed of most all of our agricultural companies, our Bayers or DuPonts and seed companies and chemical companies. Some of our NGOs, our friendly NGOs, are involved, National Wildlife Federation and so forth. We also have Fish and Wildlife Service and NRCS, and in that capacity, some universities and so forth. So the goal of that collaborative is to help facilitate, monarch conservation alongside productive agriculture. We feel that we can have both. And in this discussion, sometimes you'll run into organizations don't think you can have both, and that would be at the detriment of agriculture. So we've been working hard to, carry the message and spread the message. And, we're facing a decision coming up here in the summer of 2019. That's when U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is going to make a determination whether or not to list the monarch as an endangered or threatened species. And so in the present time frame, we're actively involved helping facilitate states that are making, state plans, about what they're going to do relative to reestablishment of, the milkweed stems on the landscape. And, Iowa's, far out in the lead on this, and Missouri is coming along real well, and several other states are in various, positions relative to contributing to this plan. But so I've been involved at that level. We've been looking at policy issues relative to that. How, are there things we can do to facilitate, implementation at the farm level that, you know, that we might change some things within our CS or our local agencies that would help make it easier for farmers to establish habitat. You know, we've got our CRP acres right now are capped at 24 million acres, I think, as most people are aware of. And of course, a lot of people would say, well, why can't we just raise the cap? And that would give us an opportunity to put more pollinator habitat on the ground. But, you know, we got a farm bill and the discussions that are that I've had out in D.C. that's not going to see any new funding. So if we don't have any new dollars, we got to get more creative with the dollars we have. And so, you know, there's mid-contract management possibilities on CRP. And every year some CRP comes due for renewal. And upon renewal, that could be ceded to a different habitat and so forth. So we're looking at all those different angles, and there's a tremendous amount of good information available out there as far as establishment protocols and how to take care of it. And one thing that's interesting, when you start driving countryside, you're starting to see the states manage the road sites differently. You know, Iowa this year, you notice that they weren't out there smoothly mowing the interstate highway system constantly. You know, they waited till after the fall flight pattern was over before they went in and mowed that prior to winter. I see Illinois starting to do some of that as well. So, you know, we got state groups that are starting to take, you know, a bigger part in this. And, you know, I've heard now our biofuel industry here in Iowa is going to take in the move to put habitat on some of their sites and so forth. And of course, there's a lot of private homeowners in towns and cities that are putting in small pollinator patches as well. So it's going to take everybody's involvement in this. It's not just on the shoulders of agriculture, but everybody. But agriculture does have the biggest control of most of the acres. And so it's incumbent upon farmers to look at what they can do in their farming operations to improve that situation for the monarch. Just when you're going around spraying your field edges and so forth, there's many times you come upon milkweed in there, and there's no reason that we have to spray all of those. We can spray where we need to control the Canadian thistle, but when monarch or milkweed are there by them lonesome, I advocate leave them alone, and let's let that habitat expand. And where you have opportunities to establish, you know, some pollinator sites with the milkweed included. A lot of people forget, you got to have the milkweed because that's the viable part that's required for the monarch to reproduce on. But we also need the nectar species, the other flowers, to provide sustenance and food for the monarchs when they head south in the wintertime. So it's an ongoing process. I know at the Commodity Classic we're going to have a kind of a national kickoff, you might say, you know, Farmers for Monarchs, and you'll hear more about that at the Commodity Classic, and we'll have some press releases and things at that time. But it's an awareness thing. We need people to become more aware. Money's also helpful in this game, and we've got a lot of, you know, companies and so forth that have programs that, you know, they're all part of this. And so trying to oversee a coordinated effort if we can, and make assist when we can, and hopefully we can show Fish and Wildlife Service that there's enough activities on the ground that come June of 2019, they'll decide that the species is safe and that the plans being laid forth will be sufficient to keep it from being listed.
Wayne, should farmers be at all concerned about this habitat leading to increased weed pressure?
Well, we've been able to control, actually, you know, that's what happened to our habitats. When we adopted, up until and before we adopted Roundup in our cropping systems, we usually had escapes in our fields. You know, our herbicide programs weren't real strong on the milkweed. The Roundup herbicide program worked very well on the milkweed. And so right now, within field, you can control it. It doesn't sneak in from the edges as long as we're maintaining a herbicide program in our fields. But we can sure have a lot more viable edges than we do. And so that's what we're advocating for. And you most everybody's got a non-productive niche or corner somewhere on their landscape or on their building site or somewhere that, you know, it might look a little prettier if you put in some milkweed and some flowers, and you solve a lot of issues that we're dealing with.
Wayne, for the farmer that thinks, well, somebody else will do this, so I don't need to, what's your message to them?
Well, if we all thought that way, we'll certainly become listed. And once the species is listed, the habitat also becomes listed. And we don't want to get there. Because once it's listed, just a simple mowing or spraying of a milk would be considered a taking. There's a $25,000 fine for a taking. I don't think we want to, you know, put farmers in jeopardy in that regard. And so, you know, the penalties are stiff for a taking. It's hard to imagine that that would happen, but that's why we're working so vigilantly to try to rebuild and bring habitat back. You know, if you think back over the transition time period when this happened, you know, we adopted better herbicide control in our program, so we lost some habitat that way. And then with the, you know, the growth of biofuels, you know, we had about 37 million acres peak in CRP there just in the late 2000s. And then with the high-priced corn, soybeans, a lot of that ground came out of CRP and went into row crop, where we had very effective weed control. So we lost 10 million acres of potential habitat there. We also lost about 10 million acres of hay ground that came into row crop. And again, we lost a lot of habitat. So we had a lot of habitat that came out during the 2000s, and that's just kind of coincided with a lot of our, you know, lowering of the viable population of the monarch butterfly. So, you know, we need to be part of the resolution, you know, and try to bring back enough habitat to maintain this species.
Wayne, I do want to ask you about the upcoming growing season, but anything else on pollinators before we move on?
I think just stay alert. Stop into your local NRCS office and see what opportunities are available in your area, and that can vary from county to county and state to state. And look for those spots that potentially you could brighten up, I'd say, on your landscape. And I know when we have guests, it's one of the first places you take and show, because they can be very, very beautiful, a nice part of your farm.
I'm sure the combine wasn't even put away and you were already formulating a plan for 2018. So as far as what you're going to do this spring, your rotation, managing input, some of those key decisions this year, is this going to be a pretty normal year on the Frederick's farm?
We've never had a normal year yet, so I don't know why this will be any different, but this will be the first year that we be 100% planting into cover crops. We were about 3/4 that way last year, so we're 100%. So we're trying to see how vibrant of a stand we'll have and see if maybe we can, we're looking at weed control cost, of course. And of course, you're also looking at multiple modes of action and a whole scenario of things to address weed strategies. But, you know, we have some farms that have very light weed pressure, and we've got some that have a little more. And my goal is, you know, to really scout, look closely on those that have relatively light weed pressure and see if we can cut some herbicide dollars, because we've got some cereal rye out there as a cover crop. I think we're getting accustomed and used enough to working with that can be the next step. And so, you know, that's one of our goals. Nitrogen management's going to be key to our cereal rye. We've heard that discussion here today in many of our presentations, that, you know, if you're going to be planting corn, you know, following cereal rye, you definitely need to manage that nitrogen quick and early, right in and around the seed, because when that rye is starting to break down, the bacteria are going to beat the corn plant to the nitrogen that's available. So you need to have plenty of it available out there at that time. I know I've got a phone conversation here in a week that's just going to be, it's through PFI, and we'll be discussing planter settings and things like that for people that are new to cover crops. Some of the things you need to double check and have or try to equip yourself with, because it's not the same as planting into a conventional seed bed by any means. And so those are some of the educational things we'll be involved with this spring. Marketing, you know, we've kind of had this little spurt here in soybeans, and we took advantage and marketed some beans here for November in that $10 plus range, and you hope that's the low sale. But you know, it's been a while getting back to that point as well. So you know, worldwide our demand is biggest ever, but we haven't had much for weather problems anywhere worldwide. So we're still growing this crop faster than we're using it, and until that changes in some way, shape, or form, you know, we're probably going to kind of be in this price area. So it's not been real fun in this price area because there hasn't been any wiggle room by any means, and you know, it's been real tight, and people are probably going through a little bit of their operating capital as well. And so that's kind of what we're looking at here moving into spring. You know, moisture conditions look good in Mitchell County. I think we've gotten like 7.8 inches of moisture in the top growing area, according to our presenter yesterday and Ellen Taylor. And so we're going to be in good shape that way. Like I said, we got our fall strips all made. And so I think moving ahead, was able to, you know, get top quality genetics bought for seed. And we've kind of got, like I said, a herbicide program laid out, but it's going to be, I think, a little more hands-on this year. You know, a lot of times you lay a program out and you put that over everything. I think we're going to try to manage that a little closer, see if we can save some money and still have good, effective weed control.
You're clearly a believer in cover crops. Have you found that there can be some unpredictability with terminating that rye in the spring, where you might not get it fully terminated the way you want to as you plant into that, or is that really a non-issue?
I haven't had any issue, but I know you'll get different responses depending on what you're spraying with the product. If you're just terminating rye with, you know, water and glyphosate, it terminates very easy and pretty quickly, and it doesn't take a lot of glyphosate. In the past, I've been combining my pre-emerge herbicides with my glyphosate ahead of soybeans. And it takes a lot more glyphosate, and the kill's a lot slower. You put them two side by side in the field, and you wouldn't even think it's the same crops out there. You know, the water-only glyphosate will be golden brown. The other one's still that pea green, you know. It dies a lot slower. I've always had a kill, though. I have not dressed that, but I've definitely upped your rates of Roundup considerably with the more product that you add along with it. So I think that's something you got to visit with your local suppliers and have a good discussion about before you just blindly go out and assume a lot of things. It always helps if the sun was shining. It always helps if it stayed above 40 degrees that night before. I think those are two things I always try to watch. And in our springs, a lot of times we, you know, have some days that aren't quite that warm at night. And actively growing cereal rye is really pretty easy to kill.
Wayne, it's always good to catch up with you. Thanks so much for the time.
Appreciate it, Mark, and good to see you again.